Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tim Cole, and I'm the Chief Registrar Liaison at ICANN, and really I'm just standing here today to introduce the session. This is a tutorial on the 2009 RAA, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, that was adopted by the Board of Directors in May and has since been signed on by a large majority of the registrars. Many of you in the room here are registrar representatives, and we're hoping that this session will provide you some background about the changes that are called for in the new RAA, as well as some of the key compliance components. I'm pleased to introduce today our two presenters. First is Brian Peck, who is the newest member of my team, the Registrar Liaison team, and Brian joined ICANN earlier this year as Registrar Liaison Manager. He has served several years of experience. He has several years of experience in international trade policy, bilateral and multilateral negotiations, government affairs, regulatory compliance, and global IP asset management in the Asia-Pacific region as an attorney, U.S. trade representative, negotiator, and in the private business sector. Brian graduated from the University of San Diego School of Law and received his BA from the University of California at Berkeley. Before earning his law degree, Brian lived and worked in Tokyo, Japan for over 9 years. So fortunately, we've added a Japanese-speaking member to our team, and then we've also added a Chinese-speaking member to our compliance team. So together, we're attempting to expand our global footprint a little bit and be a little more supportive to our registrars around the globe. After Brian speaks, we're lucky to have Pam Little, who is also a new member to the compliance team. She recently joined ICANN as Senior Director of Contractual Compliance for Asia Pacific. In this recently created new role, Pam's primary responsibility is to ensure registrars and registry operators in the Asia Pacific region comply with their contracts with ICANN. Pam is currently based in Sydney. Before joining ICANN, Pam was a senior legal counsel at the Australian Stock Exchange in Sydney, and prior to that, the regional counsel for Northeast Asia region for British Telecom, based in Hong Kong for 4 years. Pam holds a Bachelor of Law, First Class Honors from Macquarie University in Sydney, and a Bachelor of Arts from the National Cheng Chi University in Taipei, Taiwan. Pam grew up in Taipei and speaks, reads, and writes Mandarin. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to them, and thank you for attending today.
Thank you for that very kind introduction, Tim. Firstly, I just briefly talked about what will be covered in this tutorial today, and thanks once again for coming along. I think we have a relatively small audience, but I think that's a good sign. Maybe most people are very familiar with the new RAA. So we'll see. Today we thought we will divide this tutorial into three parts. Brian will cover the first two parts, the new RAA, and so he'll give you a bit of a background, you know, and history about the new RAA, and also walk you through the major changes from the 2001 version to the new version. And as you know, the second part will be the key consensus policy, the two key consensus policies. And these are two important policies we would like to cover as a reminder or refresher. As you know, the ICANN consensus policy are referenced in the RAA, actually incorporated into the RAA by reference. So the two policies Brian will cover are the inter-registrar transfer policy and the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. And lastly, I will cover the new RAA, actually the RAA, as a whole, look at the RAA from a compliance perspective to see what these changes or some of the provisions mean from a compliance perspective. And I'll also share with you some of the latest statistics on compliance. On that note, I would hand over the microphone to Brian.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Tim, thank you very much for that kind introduction. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. And we sincerely appreciate your taking the time out of your schedule to attend this tutorial on the 2009 RAA. Before we start, our legal department has asked that we establish a disclaimer. So just to remind everyone that this presentation and the accompanying slides are a summary only, and they do not amend or modify the terms of the 2001 or 2009 Registrar Accreditation Agreement or ICANN consensus policies, and do not create or waive any rights or obligations, and are not construed to be, or not to be meant to be construed as legal advice. We do ask that you please refer to the actual text of the agreements and our consensus policies to understand the specific scope, obligations, rights, and limitations. So thank you. And with that, we'll take our legal hats off and get back to the actual tutorial. For the purposes of this presentation, we'll refer to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement as the RAA. So to get started, I think as Tim mentioned at the outset, the 2009 RAA was adopted by the ICANN Board on the 21st of May earlier this year. It is available, the full text, on the website at the address that's posted up there on the slide, and of course is easily accessible through the ICANN website. There are three primary reasons why the RAA was revised and the final version with 17 amendments was adopted by the ICANN Board. First, it was meant to reflect the changes and address concerns in the domain name system, primarily to make sure that all participants in the registration marketplace meet minimum standards. Second, it is meant to enhance protections for domain registrants. And third, it's meant to clarify and streamline certain contractual terms in order to modernize the agreement and meet current needs in the marketplace. The RAA is a result of a bottom-up process involving an extensive stakeholder consultation, including dialogue with the registrar constituency as well as other constituencies and organizations. There were three separate public comment period processes over a period of 26 months. So the final result of this agreement that was adopted in May was significantly and thoroughly reviewed and vetted by the community in order to serve the community's interests. So who is required to sign on to the 2009 RAA? First of all, every new registrar is required to sign the 2009 RAA. There's no option between choosing the previous version and the 2009 version. In addition, every existing registrar, upon renewal of its current accreditation, must sign the 2009 RAA. And finally, all other registrars who are in good standing may sign the 2009 RAA at any time prior to their actual renewal date. There are several incentives for registrars to sign on to the 2009 RAA. For example, signing on to the this IRA will automatically grant the registrar a new five-year term from the date of signing. For registrars that sign on to the 2009 RAA, the fiscal year 2009-2010 transaction fee is decreased from U.S. 20 cents to U.S. 18 cents. And the registrar variable fee is reduced by 10% over that fiscal year of 2009-2010. In addition, for registrars who have signed on to the 2009 RAA, they will be added to a distinctive list of registrars that is posted on the ICANN and InterNIC websites. There's a special logo that is affixed to that registrar indicating to potential customers and registrants that that registrar is a 2009 RAA signatory. And in addition, an incentive, especially for areas outside of North America, is that ICANN provides an accreditation certificate in the registrar's local language if they would care to elect to receive one. Here are some of the key changes that are in the 2009 RAA that are different from the 2001 or previous version of the RAA. First, there are enhanced enforcement tools to ensure full compliance with the RAA and ICANN consensus policies. There are new sanctions for noncompliance. What this means is that prior to the 2009 RAA, the only sanction for noncompliance was termination. In the 2009 RAA, which Pam will address later on, there are other types of sanctions that will that can be done short of actual termination. There are new requirements for registrar contact information. There are additional audit and data escrow requirements. There are new requirements for reseller agreements. And there are administrative and procedural changes in the 2009 RAA. And Pam and I will be covering each of these in more detail throughout the presentation. There are also changes in the 2009 RAA with regard to fees. There are new incentives. Specifically, the U.S. $4,000 annual fee can be now be paid in quarterly installments, and the U.S. $500 per top-level domain fee has been removed. There are also new sanctions with regard to fees, and that interest will be imposed at 1.5% or the maximum rate permitted by local law per month for late payments, and those are payments basically that are past 30 days due. The new registrar obligations under the 2009 RIA include new information requirements. The registrar must now provide ICANN with an updated list of its directors and officers. And if there are any changes in the list of directors and officers, the registrar must notify ICANN of those changes and update the list within 30 days. The registrar must provide accurate contact details on its website, which includes an accurate email and mailing address. If an entity buys an accredited registrar, then that acquiring controlling entity must inform ICANN within 30 days upon a change of ownership and provide a statement of compliance with the accreditation requirements and the RAA obligations. A registrar must also provide additional information within 15 days of receiving a request from ICANN. Another new registrar obligation that applies is in the case of when a registrar is also a registered domain name holder. In that case, the registrar must comply with all obligations of the registrant pursuant to the RAA obligations. In addition, there is a new data escrow requirement in the case of private or proxy registrations. Under the 2009 RAA, a registrar must either escrow the data provided by the customer of any privacy service or licensee of any proxy registration service offered by the registrar or its affiliate companies, or display a conspicuous notice to such customers at the time of election of such service that their data is not being escrowed. And the data that is required to be included in the database includes the name and postal address, email address, and voice telephone number provided by the customer of the privacy or proxy service. The use of resellers is a common practice, and so to address community concerns, the 2009 RAA, for the first time, includes provisions governing the registrar-reseller contractual relationship. The 2009 RAA requires that the registration agreement used by the reseller shall include the RAA provisions and consensus policies, including data escrow requirements, that the reseller is prohibited from using ICANN logos or representing themselves as accredited by ICANN without written permission, that the reseller must identify the sponsoring registrar to a customer inquiry, and that registrars shall take steps against non-compliant resellers and have the right to terminate a reseller agreement due to non-compliance. These new obligations are meant to enhance protection for registrants who are customers of resellers by obligating resellers to follow ICANN policies and requiring that they either escrow privacy proxy customer data or alternatively give prominent notification that such data is not to be escrowed. And the resellers under the new RAA shall provide registrars with data of the customers of privacy or licensees of proxy registrations. Other new registrar obligations include a registrar skills training obligation. Under this obligation, the registrar operator must complete a training course on the RAA and ICANN consensus policy obligations when it becomes available. The training must be undertaken by the registrar's primary contact or a specified person. The training course is currently being developed and is scheduled to be completed and be available for training in early 2010. In addition, the registrar must provide a link to any ICANN published website on registrant rights and responsibilities. These rights and responsibilities are currently being developed. Once they are finalized and adopted by the community, they will be posted on a web page, and at that time, the registrar will be required to provide a link to that web page on any registrar or business-related website. There are also some new liability provisions in the 2009 RAA. With regard to group liability, a registrar may be held responsible, that is, in breach of the 2009 RAA, if an affiliated registrar's accreditation has been terminated as a result of misconduct, that materially harmed consumers of the public interest, and a second affiliated registrar has pursued the same course of conduct after the termination that resulted in the initial affiliate's determination. Section 1.20 of the RAA defines an affiliated registrar as another ICANN-accredited registrar that operates under a common controlling interest. And this new provision prevents so-called serial misconduct by registrars when another affiliated registrar's RAA is terminated. With regard to the licensee contact information disclosure requirement, under the 2001 RAA, a registered name holder licensing use of a registered name must accept liability for harm caused by wrongful use of the registered name by the licensee unless the licensor promptly discloses the identity of the licensee to the party providing the registered name holder reasonable evidence of actual harm. The 2009 RAA clarifies that the licensor, in addition to providing the identity of the licensee, must also now promptly disclose the current contact information provided by the licensee, again, to the party that provides evidence of actual harm in the misuse of the registered name. The 2009 RAA also includes administration and procedural changes. With regard to the arbitration stay, under the 2009 RAA, if a registrar initiates litigation or arbitration against the termination of its RAA by ICANN, the termination will no longer be automatically stayed for an additional 30 days. Under the 2001 RAA, anytime there was litigation or arbitration initiated by a registrar, there was an automatic stay. That is no longer automatic. Instead, under the 2009 RAA, upon a request from the registrar, an arbitration panel, shall order a stay of termination or suspension if only it doesn't harm the consumer or public interest, or upon appointment of a third party to manage the registrar's operation until a final decision is rendered. The purpose of this change is to facilitate a more efficient arbitration process and terminations. There are also new notice provisions under the 2009 RAA. The notice requirement has been modified to allow the notice of a new policy or specification published by ICANN via either email and posting on the ICANN website. As in the 2001 RAA, the registrar will be afforded a reasonable period of time to comply with that specification or policy. In addition, parties must notify the other within 30 days of any change in contact information. The 2009 RAA also formally incorporates two consensus policies, the Who Is Marketing Restriction Policy and the Expired Domain Deletion Policy. These are two consensus policies that were adopted after the 2001 RAA and, of course, were in effect from the date of adoption. But under the 2009 RAA, the specific language of these consensus policies are now incorporated directly into the agreement itself. The next part of the presentation, I'd like to focus on two key ICANN consensus policies which registrars are obligated to comply with under the 2009 RAA. The first is the inter-registrar transfer policy. Section 4.1 of the RAA requires compliance, and the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy, which is required for registrars to comply with under RAA Section 3.8. The key basis for the inter-registrar transfer policy is that a registered name holder must be able to transfer their domain name registrations between registrars through a clear and concise process. Under the inter-registrar transfer policy, all requests to transfer a domain name to a new registrar must be handled according to the policy procedures. The policy, of course, is available on the ICANN website. The address is up there on the slide, and again, easily accessible on the ICANN website. In addition, in order to initiate the transfer process and to facilitate the process, the standardized form of authorization must be used. And these forms, again, are also available on the ICANN website. The use of the form of authorization is required under the inter-registrar transfer policy. The gaining registrar must use a form of authorization to initiate the transfer, and the registrar must retain and produce a written copy or electronic copy of the FOA within 5 days if requested by the losing registrar. Failure to provide the form of authorization is grounds for reversal by the registry operator or a dispute resolution panel. The registrar of record may deny a transfer request only in specific instances, and under the inter-registrar transfer policy, there are 9 specific instances listed in the policy under which the registrar may deny a transfer request. If a transfer is denied by the registrar, then that registrar must provide the registered name holder and the potential gaining registrar the reason for the denial. Instances when a request to transfer may not be denied include, but are not limited to, circumstances of non-payment or default, no response from the registered name holder or administrative contact, the domain name is in registrar lock status, or the domain name registration is under certain time constraints. Under the inter-registrar transfer policy, the registrar must not employ the transfer process as a mechanism to secure payment for services from a registered name holder. There are 2 exceptions to this policy. One is in the case of non-payment for previous registration periods, if the transfer is requested after the expiration date, or in the case of non-payment of the current registration period, if the transfer is requested before the expiration date. Outside of these 2 exceptions, as I said, under the inter-registrar transfer policy, the registrar cannot use this transfer process as a mechanism to secure payment. The other key consensus policy which the registrar must comply with under the 2009 RAA is the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. And this policy sets terms and conditions for the resolution of a dispute over registration and use of the domain name. It also incorporates rules for the process for the dispute resolution under the UDRP. Registrars are required to comply with this policy, and specifically, registrars are required to cancel, transfer, or make changes to domain names under specific circumstances. They must comply with limitations on transfers during a dispute. They must comply with established deadlines and notice requirements for responding to a registrar request for transfer or cancellation, and comply with deadlines for compliance with an arbitration panel's decision under the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. So again, these are two, the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy and the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy are two key consensus policies that are specifically incorporated in the 2009 RA and require compliance by the registrar. So at this point, we'd like to give people in the audience a chance to ask any questions they may have on either the RAA itself or ICANN key consensus policies. If you are more comfortable, we have paper and pens. If you would like to write down the question, we'd be happy to answer it. You're welcome to come up to the mic in any way that you would prefer to ask questions. We'd be happy to answer any questions at this time, as I say, either on the 2009 RAA or key consensus policies before we move on to compliance-related issues.
Hi, Frédéric Guimau, Mail Club. Once you're a new registrar and you've just signed the new RAA, I was wondering if there is a way, because you come from reseller of a registrar, to become yourself a registrar. Is there any way to make some bulk transfers to your new registrar account? Because that is going to be a very good, big problem for all these people maybe in the room who are going to sign this new RAA, become registrar.
I think I'll try handling this one. there at present time, the opportunity to do a partial, what we would call a partial bulk transfer, because a reseller only has some of the names at the registrar, and so there isn't really a provision that allows for that sort of transfer. However, right now, for example, VeriSign has a proposal request in to provide a service that would allow just that, but it is a registry by registry thing. So basically, first of all, you have to have agreement with the registrar that you're a reseller with, and then the registry has to permit it through a special service that they get approval from ICANN for. There's been talk about possibly creating some sort of policy about this, but it has not been developed in any formal way yet within ICANN. So the long and the short answer is it would not be easy, and in some cases, in certain TLDs, you wouldn't be able to do it at all. So most resellers that become registrars simply have to have their customers over time transfer upon renewal, or transfer if they can encourage them to. And then, of course, there's a cost to transfer. It's a, you know, it would be an additional year, but it would incur a cost. Any other questions for the panel?
I missed the explanation for the data escrow. Could you repeat that? Could you a little bit more explain to me about the proxy registration and the data escrow?
Data escrow? Sure.
Thank you.
The proxy registration piece in the data escrow.
Sure. Yes, thank you for your question. Basically, under the new data escrow requirements, they either have to escrow data provided by a customer of a privacy or proxy service, and or notify that customer up front with a very conspicuous notice that they do not offer such data escrow service. So what the change from the 2001 RAA is prior to the 2009 RAA, data was not required to be escrowed if it was a data from a customer of a proxy or privacy service. Now under the 2009 RAA, such data is to be either escrowed or, again, as I said, they must notify that service is not provided.
Can I just add to that? Basically, the idea of escrowing registrant data is to offer an additional layer of protection for registrants in the case of a registrar failure. So therefore, this new provision basically is saying you either escrow the data the customer offered, or you tell the customer upfront your data would not be escrowed. So the customer can make an informed choice, because in case the registrar unfortunately does fail, then that data may not be available to ICANN and therefore to facilitate transfer. Does that make sense?
Other questions? These are really good. Remember, if you have a question, probably someone else has the same question, so please ask it.
Just to have a confirmation, does it mean that I could go and sign with my new RIA without doing any data escrow and just putting a note on my website? Because that's not what I was told. So.
The previous question only covered the scenario where the customers are actually registering the name under proxy or privacy service.
It's only for privacy.
Yes.
Proxy services. Okay. And why? What is the point of escrowing data for TLDs where there's a thick registry?
Sorry, can you? I didn't catch that.
In some registries, all the data is by the registry. So what is the point of escrowing the data? Because the registry has got it already.
Well, data, some registries are thick and some registries are thin. And the information that you're obligated to deposit in data escrow is more complete than what we could get from any registry. And it's also, we do not have access to it unless your registrar goes out of business or is deaccredited. So this is simply a safety deposit that is, you know, protects the safety and security of your registrants. Just to clarify, with regard to the data escrow requirement, if you do have privacy or proxy services and you choose not to deposit the underlying information but rather put that statement, you still have to deposit the information of the privacy or proxy service. So you have to deposit information for 100% of your registrations. Yes.
Could you let us give information on the register skill training and testing that that you said that it's completed and next year? But my question is that the training is doing on online, kind of web-based, or the register must go to the ICANN office or is that put the training session along with ICANN meetings or the I'd like to know about it.
Sure, thank you very much for your question. Yes, I mean, we are currently in the process of developing the training program. And in fact, for any registrars in the audience that are interested, we will be developing this program in consultation with registrars. And there is a meeting scheduled for tomorrow in the afternoon that you're welcome to attend so that we can receive your input on what would be most useful for you on the registrar training program. It is scheduled to be completed sometime in early next year. It will be primarily in a package, you say, in the format of a webinar or a program that you can access online. I'm sure if there is a desire for in-person training, we can accommodate that as well. But in order to make it available for all registrars, you know, globally, it will be, as I say, online format.
And it will be free.
And it is free. Thank you.
I'm from Afghanistan. We are in January 2010. We will be opening up our CCTLD for more registrars. So far, the registry itself is a registrar as well. So, regarding the REA, just to get information, whether the same REA will be given to the registrar to sign with the CCTLD, or there will be any room for negotiation on certain clauses that they will be negotiating with the CCTLD.
Thank you for the question. The RIA only is available for registrars that offer for GTLDs. There's no contractual relationship with the CCTLDs.
Just for the information, whether there is any such documents which are already available with ICANN so that the CCTLDs can get, because as I mentioned, we're just starting with this new culture. So if you can give me some information on that or any link that we can download something from.
Definitely, we can provide you the information for our the documents that we have online. And if you access, this whole presentation is on the meeting website schedule, so you can see the slides there, and the links are on those slides. But you can also speak with the representative from your region in the Global Partnership Department, which I believe is Bahar Asmat, and we may be able to provide you more in-person information and so forth as well. Other questions?
Yes,
Jana.
Sorry, I missed out, I think slide 22, about the transfer process. Mentioned the importance of a FOA. What does FOA mean?
Could you repeat it again?
You have this inter-registrar transfer process, which you mentioned the importance of a FOA. So what is FOA?
Okay. Thank you. FOA is the form of authorization or standardized form of authorization. In order to initiate and facilitate an inter-registrar transfer, you must use these forms, and those forms are available on the ICANN website. Again, the link is up on the page.
One of the reasons that Brian and Pam are emphasizing that today is because we've discovered that there are a lot of registrars that don't necessarily understand this requirement completely and may not be following it, but it is absolutely essential that if you have someone coming to you saying they want to transfer a name from another registrar to your registrar, that you have them, this form must be used as part of that to confirm that this person is in fact the appropriate party to be transferring the name. And that has been a serious problem, and so I think that's one of the reasons we're emphasizing. I'll let Pam speak to it from a compliance standpoint.
Yes, if I could add to that. Basically, if you don't use that form, and then later on there is a dispute about that transfer, you won't be able to produce that form as an evidence that you actually have the consent or authority from the registrar to make that transfer. So you can either use a paper-based FOA, or you can actually incorporate that into your interface with your customers. So they basically to get all the basic information prescribed under that form.
It's not quite clear to me why, with the existing of an FOA, that it is also required that the registrant acknowledge the email from the losing registrar. It seems to me the registrant has provided the auth code to the gaining registrar in order to initiate the process. And why is it required then that they respond? Because in some cases, the data in the WHOIS has an incorrect email address so that the registrant does not receive that essential document.
I'll try to answer that question. I don't know whether I have the right answer. I guess usually the transfer request will be initiated by the gaining registrar. And so the gaining registrar has used that FOA and then obtained the auth code. But some losing registrars, not all, also would use the FOA to just as a verification to make sure their customer, the existing registrant, is consenting to that transfer. So it's like a verification or a double check.
But they aren't allowed to prevent the transfer simply because they don't get a response. The losing registrar cannot stop the transfer because they don't get a response. That sounded like what you were asking.
Quite often what the losing registrar will do is send a confirmation email that says, This domain name is subject to a transfer order. If you do not want it to be transferred, then, you know, click here or something like that. But if you don't respond to that email, it will transfer. It provides the registrant optionally, some registrars, I don't want to confuse anyone, optionally some registrars will send that to provide the registrant with the opportunity to personally say, I deny this transfer. That will stop the process. But otherwise, the losing registrar can't stop it.
All right. I think we have another section to go through here, right? So unless there are more questions about these things, I think we'll let them go on to the next session, and then we'll have another Q&A period. So, and if you are uncomfortable talking in the microphone but want to ask a question, we also have pads of paper and pens, or you can write it down on a piece of paper that you may have, and we'll be glad to take that questions that way. Thank you.
Okay, now we move on to the final part of this tutorial. I thought it might be helpful to look at the RAA from a relational point of view. So I found that useful for myself, and I hope you'll find the same. So if we look at the new RAA, assuming you are a registrar and you have recently signed the new RAA and you thought, yes, I got a new five-year term from the recent month, that is really not the case, because although the RAA is for a term of 5 years, during that period, you need to continue to comply with the obligations under the RAA to stay accredited by ICANN. So if I look at the RAA from a registrar's perspective and their obligations, I could roughly divide their obligations into two categories. And the RAA actually specifically refers to those relationships as well. So you have certain obligations to ICANN under the RAA. That's after the contract has signed. But I also like to remind everyone there's also a pre-contract representation or information or material you might have provided to ICANN for your accreditation application. So subsection 5.31 says if you actually provided false information or made misrepresentation to obtain that accreditation, then ICANN might be able to revoke that accreditation. So you need to be careful that during your accreditation process, you do provide reliable and correct information to ICANN. That's a pre-contractual stage. And after you sign up to the new RAA, then the contractual obligations will kick in. The RAA also contemplates other relationship the registrar has with other parties. These relationships, you might have contract with those third parties, you might have no contract with those third parties. And the next slide is a diagram. I try to see whether that would help you sort of visualize all these complicated relationships. As a business registrar, you probably have multiple contracts with different parties, but this diagram is only intended to show the sort of the ICANN community, if you like, or the internet community. So if we look at the registrar, you would have a RAA with ICANN, and you would also have the registrar agreement with various registry operators, maybe just one, maybe multiple. And now under the new RAA, or even that you have the reseller agreement with your resellers, you might have one reseller, you might have many resellers. And then you have your registration agreement, which is mandatory under the RAA. You must have an electronic or paper-based agreement with your customers that's manifested in a registration agreement. And the new RAA, as Brian has mentioned, also cover your relationship with your affiliates, related companies of the registrar. So that's not shown in this diagram, but if you need to consider how that might impact your relationship and your obligations under the RAA. So this slide basically just describes the previous diagram. I just want to mention about those contractual relationships that clearly cover in various agreements. And now, previously we were talking about the data escrow. So now you also have an agreement, or most of you would have an agreement, with ICANN's escrow agent to escrow your data. And I'm very pleased to see we actually have the representative from Iron Mountain. Most of the registrar actually have chosen Iron Mountain to deposit their escrow data on a regular basis. And another point I want to make is about the non-contractual relationship you have as a registrar, because those relationships might impact your operation and even your obligations or compliance with the under the new RA. Because as a registrar, you have a very important role to play, and you'll be interacting with the general public, you'll be interacting with other registrars or registrants who you have a... Those registrants you have a contract with, they are your direct customers, but many other domain name holders, and you'll be interacting with IP attorneys, right owners, or law enforcement agencies. And this could be your local entities, it could be parties that are in other jurisdictions. And why this is important to know about these non-contractual obligations you have. In the RA, your note, there is a provision that the registrar must comply with all applicable laws and regulations. So you need to be aware what those are, because if you don't, then arguably that will be a breach of the RAA. And also I want to point out, this might be something, you know, you didn't pay, haven't paid enough attention, or you didn't look at it that way. If you look at the RAA, Section 532, it sets out a number of grounds that ICANN may terminate the RAA if the registrar or its officers or directors have been committed of a serious felony or serious crime, or involving fraud or breach of fiduciary duty, and or anything else that I can consider would be a substantive equivalent of those crimes or offences, then they will be ground for ICANN to terminate the RAA. And then in that situation, you will lose the accreditation. So this is just a recap of the obligations a registrar would have under the RAA. So you have to pay fees. And Brian has mentioned about some incentives about fees, so I think that's good news. There's a lot of obligations around data, which I would talk a bit more later on. And there are operational obligations, corporate obligations, and admin and procedural. And I would like to actually spend the next three slides on data alone, because I felt it is a complicated area, but a very important area from a registrar's perspective. You have different obligations under different provisions, and those obligations are actually owing or interacting with other parties. For example, if you see, look at this slide, those numbers at the end of those bullet points, they're the actual section in the RAA. As a registrar, you have to collect and update certain data, mainly the registrant's data. And you then have to submit some data to the registry operators, and you also have to escrow some data to the escrow agent, and then you have to provide access to the public through port 43 or web-based query-based service. And you also have to provide third-party bulk access via access agreement, and the RA actually prescribe the maximum amount you can charge for that kind of access. And you also have to retain and make available the data upon request by ICANN. So there's sort of different types of obligations surrounding data alone. And if I move on to the next one, then you'll see these different obligations actually involve different scope, i.e. elements of the data. For example, the registry data under the first bullet point there, or sub-bullet point, I think that it's not registry data. Registry data actually is a defined term under the RAA. This is the registered name holder data you actually need to submit to a registry operator under section 321. And there's this who is data. The 8 elements are set out in from subsection 33112-3318. Then there is also a scope for RDE data, which basically is the thick who is data under 341. But there is also registration data, which is very wide in scope, that each registrar will be required to retain for a minimum of 3 years under subsection 3421 and 3423. And why these are so complicated, but they are important, because if we move on to the next slide, you'll see under the 201 RAA, a registrar is required to keep the data, and I can may inspect or copy all that data and records. But under the new RA, the 2009 RA, I may conduct registrar audits by requesting documents from registrars or conducting site visits. And so this is actually quite a powerful tool, because you need to retain all that data in the event that I can actually request a site audit, or even for a registrar to provide the documents and records. So now I'll move on to, we just talked about audits. I want to share with you, these are the current plan for the financial year 2010, our plan's audit schedule. You can see from January to March, we have these audits currently planned, and RDE actually is just an ongoing process. As you know, these all registrars are required to make a scheduled deposit either on a weekly or daily basis for registrars that have large number of registration. So the RDE is actually ongoing. In fact, we have already started the audit a few months back. Then they are IRTP, the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, Brian briefly talked about, which is very important, and we feel, because we do have a lot of, seem to have a lot of issues or complaints we received, so we're now going to develop the plan in the first 3 months of 2010, and hopefully roll out the audit from April next year. And in terms of the UDRP that Brian talked about, we also want to carry out some UDRP audit make sure that registrar will comply, will implement the UDRP panel decisions. This is one of the complaints that we receive that, constantly saying there's some registrar just not implementing the UDRP decisions. So these are really driven by, our compliance efforts and based on the public complaints we received. And speaking of public complaints, this slide you'll see transfer problems is the major source of our complaint. Over 2,000 out of 9,300 just in the first 9 months of this year. So those two sources, the ICANN plan audits that we carry out according to the schedule and the public complaints we received, really are the main two sources that would then lead to further escalated enforcement actions. So when we carry out an audit and the audit reveals non-compliance, then there might be escalated enforcement action to follow. Or the complaints we receive reveal non-compliance, then there will be escalated actions. Although I might stress that not all the public complaints we receive would warrant escalated actions. So we will look at them and then see what will be the appropriate next step to take. So the enforcement actions that contractual compliance department deal with in the past seem to indicate the major problem areas are the RDE, the registrar data escrow, the who is service, or who is including, the registrar's obligation to investigate inaccuracy reports. And some registrar just, despite the reports submitted by ICANN to them, they sometimes don't investigate the inaccuracy. And also, there are instances where the registrar just don't provide the website or Port 43 services to the general public. And we also have a few issues around payment of accreditation fees by certain registrars, and UDRP issues, IRTP issues, expired domain deletion policy, and in small instances, unauthorized use of ICANN's logo. And this, although it sounds very trivial, but in the RA clearly says how you may use ICANN logo, how that logo should appear. You only use that logo ICANN specified, but you'll be amazed to find some registrar actually wouldn't use that logo. They use something else, something different that ICANN didn't authorize. Now, in this slide, I'd like to share with you some of the enforcement activity so far. We actually, in the last few months this year, we terminated or not renewed 16 registrars' accreditation agreements, issued 184 breach notices, and over 4,000 enforcement actions were taken. And Brian also mentioned this earlier. You would recall under the 2001 RAA, the ultimate sanction ICANN can take against a non-compliant registrar is terminate or not renew their RAA. But under the new RAA, the 2009 RAA, there are additional tools we can use. For example, we can suspend the registrar's ability to create new registrations and inbound transfers for up to 12 months. And the other tool I feel is important and you should be aware of is that registrar may potentially be liable for ICANN's reasonable enforcement costs. So if we take enforcement action, the costs incurred by such action may be recoverable from the registrar. And then in the instance, in case where there is willful material breach by the registrar, the cost can be up to 5 times of the enforcement cost. So need to be aware of this potential liability. Of course, all these enforcement actions, compliance efforts I shared with you earlier, they were just means to an end. We want ideally all registrars to comply with the obligations under the IA and, be a good player in this in the registration industry. The termination, the breach notice, they themselves are not an end. But I just want to, and if you see the statistics, you can see the communities really expect ICANN to step up its compliance efforts. So you can see from the statistics, in the first 6 years since we start taking stats, between 2003 and 2008, we have 24 non-renewal termination, but in the last 10 months alone, we have 16. So I hope this is a sort of an indication that we are taking compliance, non-compliance issues very, very seriously at ICANN, and we're here to help you, Brian, and myself and my compliance team members here to help registrar to comply with their obligations. So if there's anything we can do to help you to understand the new RA or even the 201 RA or to understand how you may better comply with your obligations, then let us know. So my, I guess, closing remark is don't be part of the statistics. Okay. We have question time now. Yes.
Of these 16, are they involuntary? Is there a difference? Or do you have a different list of voluntary resignation, if you will? In other words, I'm thinking in terms of the economic situation now. And the perhaps non-economic value of a lot of the shell registrars or accreditations which have been popular with the tasing. Thank you.
Tim, would you be able to repeat that? The echo makes it really hard to hear.
Yeah, I can just shout. No. I'm asking, is there a separate list of voluntary accredited? In other words, if somebody says, okay, we're going to close this shell registrar, does that number appear in that 16?
Yeah, but the 16, the number of 16, as far as I'm aware, are all results of breach of the RIA, not because of voluntary termination. Under the RIA, any registrar can terminate on 30 days' notice to ICANN. They don't have to stay accredited.
Is there any, please use information for the interpreters?
They need to be able to translate the...
Do I need to repeat? My question is there a separate list of those who have voluntarily turned in their accreditation?
No, not that I'm aware of.
No, there isn't. Any other questions? So... if you have any questions, whether it's about this section with regard to compliance, the section on transfer policy and UDRP, or on the 2009 RAA, we have a few minutes left. If you're not comfortable asking now, do we have your email addresses up there?
Tim, two things here for the attendees. First of all, if you have not signed on to the 2009 RAA, the easiest way to do so is to go online to the ICANN website. There's a form there that you can complete and email back to us, and that website or the address is up there and, again, easily accessible on the ICANN website. In addition, if, as Tim mentioned, if you do have any follow-up questions either from this particular presentation and or any other questions that come up on either the 2009 RA or consensus policies or compliance issues, both Pam's and my contact information are up there on the screen, and we welcome to any questions you may have either later on this week, today, or subsequently afterwards. Feel free to contact us.
No more questions?
Well, again, thank you very much for taking the time to attend the presentation this afternoon. We appreciate it, and look forward to seeing you around the rest of this week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.